Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 323, recorded on February 19th, 2017. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer and Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, guys, how are you doing?
Pretty much awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah, I'm hanging in there.
Good. All right, so apparently we've been screwing around too long before the show, and Jeff has to leave soon, so we're going to get right into it. Apple announces WWDC 2017 pretty darn early. It will be taking place June 5th. Through 9th in San Jose, which is the first time it's been in San Jose since, I believe, 2002?
That is correct.
Yes.
Yeah. I think Apple announced WWDC early because so many people reserve hotel rooms way ahead of the event, and so they reserved hotel rooms in San Francisco.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'm totally with Jeff. So they're like, hey, heads up, guys. You need to move your hotel.
Yeah. So I have my room reserved in San Jose.
You do?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, if you're not reserving now, you're not going to get a place to stay.
Wowzers. That's crazy.
Yeah, within like an hour of Apple having the announcement out, I'd booked a room.
Very cool. All right. So
And I was thinking I was going to be screwed because I waited a whole hour.
I think people were still trying to digest the change. We're like, huh? What? But I think it's a great change by Apple. Especially for cost purposes, logistics. I think it's probably a much more low key place for the attendees, and it works out much better for their developers as well because it's much closer to campus, right?
I think that's a big thing right there. Closer to campus means that you can logistically get more of Apple's own staff involved in WWDC without having to commit them for like a whole day or a couple days.
Yeah. So, yeah, as you know, it's kind of a bummer that they won't be in beautiful San Francisco and use Moscone West, which is very much, you know, an iconic, like, towering thing when Apple gets there. Yeah, I think it's a good decision overall in a lot of ways. So pretty cool. I might come up. No, I probably won't. We'll see. I don't know. I think I'll probably have like,
if you do come up, we'll hang out.
We'll hang out. Yeah, of course. T-Mobile is shaking stuff up as usual. So Verizon announced a new unlimited data plan for $80 per month. With you know, unlimited data, unlimited was it unlimited tethering, I believe, for Verizon. Regardless, T-Mobile decided to one up them again, and now so the T-Mobile one, it is $70 per month for the first line for unlimited data, talk and text, unlimited hotspot. I'm sorry, 10 gigs hotspot.
No, hotspot is not unlimited on
10,
either.
10 gigs hotspot.
Yeah. No, okay, so when you get above the 10 gigs, they drop you down to 3G speeds.
Yes.
But keep in mind, T-Mobile's 3G speeds are a lot faster than Verizon's 3G speeds.
That's good. And you have unlimited, you can do HD stream quality for video.
Yeah, don't you have to shut off, what do they call it, binge now?
I'm not super clear on that. I've taken the plunge because it's going to save me about $10, you know, and so I'm going to be going from 3 gigs to unlimited and saving $10, which kicks butt.
Do you remember when the carriers were fighting tooth and nail to get us off unlimited data plans?
Isn't that fun?
Now good times.
Thanks, John Legere. You're dope. You're doing fun stuff.
Well, it's because they realized that even with unlimited, most people like barely use any data.
Yeah.
Like most people. It's like a small fraction of a percentage of the people who are using data the way we use data. Although it's gonna get heavier when people start to realize they can like stream their video all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. But the thing to keep in mind is with the most popular video streaming apps, T-Mobile has at least T-Mobile, I would guess Verizon as well. They have deals with, you know, Netflix, YouTube, that sort of thing, that makes it so all those videos are pre-processed before they come to you, or at least the lower quality versions come to you. And by lower quality, yeah,
that's,
I mean,
that's if you have binge on active.
Again, right. Do you know for sure if that's even an option with this T-Mobile one? I think that goes away. Because I don't think any advantage.
So
now
in their other plan, you have the binge on option. In this one, you don't. It's just the throttle or scaled down content for video.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the problem
data.
With cell companies. Even T-Mobile, which is trying to be really cool and make it clear what we're getting, it's still complicated.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they're just constantly changing what they offer. Because they're shaking stuff up. It's hard to keep track of everything. You know, I called when I saw this, I went, wait a minute, really? And I called them and I said, really? Is it cheaper if I get more? And they said, yeah, it's cheaper if you get more. And I said, well, how about if I have this iPhone 7 promotion where you're paying me for it? And they said, yeah, you keep that. And I said, well, what about if I have an installment agreement on another phone? They said, yeah, you keep that. You're good. And I said, really? And they said, yeah. So I took it.
That's pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah.
The other nice thing about the T-Mobile plan versus the Verizon one is their pricing is taxes and fees included. So mm-hmm. it's $70. It's not $70 and then a bunch of add-on like weird fees and stuff, government fees and things like that.
Right. So I should really say jacking the price for one line.
So Verizon really isn't $80.
Yeah. Verizon's $85 for the unlimited on one line. 10 gigs hotspot, HD video. I guess you get unlimited data in Mexico and Canada on T-Mobile as well. Unlimited 2G once you, that's in the rest of the world. And you also get the GoGo.
Yeah, again, that's awesome if you're roaming. You know, if you're not going to get hit with a massive data bill when you're traveling internationally.
Yeah,
right?
It's good stuff.
You don't have to, like,
these
get
are positives.
A new SIM.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super cool. I love the fact that you can do iMessage on a plane no matter what on T-Mobile.
Verizon lets you have 4G, but it's $10 a day.
Verizon, they've got some weird stuff with their plans. And everyone I know that uses Verizon when they're doing like serious traveling, they just take it up the butt. I mean, they'll pay extra so they don't have to get screwed.
And then they get screwed
And then they get screwed.
Yeah.
And then they find out what they paid extra for. They didn't need to because there was this other thing, but they'd been told to get this. And I'm not pleased with the way Verizon handles this stuff. But yeah. That's not the point. Yay, T-Mobile.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately what we're seeing is T-Mobile's continuing to push the rest of the industry to something that's more favorable for consumers. And that's good. So Did you guys hear, according to the Times of Israel, Apple has acquired this company called RealFace. They're a cybersecurity and machine learning firm. They specialize in facial recognition technology. And they did have an app for a while that helped you pick. It'd help you select the best photos that you had in your library just with the recognition software that they had called PicEase. I don't believe it exists anymore, but I like the idea. And for whatever reason, so Apple paid $20 million for them. Sorry. Lost track of it. Doesn't matter.
They paid a lot of money for
two, them. Estimated $2 million. That's not that much. I mean, it's a lot.
Oh, only $2 million?
Yeah, $2 million. Now, okay, so everybody's with the iPhone 8/7S around the corner, everybody's freaking out about security and the facial recognition stuff. I don't think this is related to facial recognition for security purposes at all. I think it's to bolster Apple's ability to recognize faces in the photo apps.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, this is what, the fourth facial recognition company Apple has bought over the last like 3 years.
Yep.
3 or 4 years. And I'm not buying into this is the new security authentication system. There's no way Apple would just jump right into that. I mean, I could see them adding some sort of facial recognition system to the phone, but it would be used for something else initially. And then after they've proven to themselves that it works for security purposes, then they could enable it on a future phone model. But that's not where they're going this year.
Yeah, I can see it being an additional way to authenticate.
Yes. As a secondary level, maybe for some apps or things like that, I think it would be a good thing, right?
Sure. And that would be a great way for Apple to test it in a safer environment.
Yeah. Yep. So according to JP Morgan analyst Rod Hall, he says that Apple will be implementing a 3D facial recognition scanner in the iPhone 8, where additional features. So he believes, again, it's for security, but he also believes there would be APIs for developers to do a bunch of interesting things, such as I believe, like, help you with your seating on your bike, or, you know, help figure out your shoe size, that sort of thing. Those are just random ideas that developers could take advantage of with 3D photograph technology.
I just want the augmented reality app. That I hold my camera up, and as someone's approaching me and it tells me, oh yeah, that's so-and-so in your contacts.
Yeah. Well,
oh yes.
I can definitely see this stuff. I think it's more advantageous as a not so much as a security feature, but as a door to all these other technologies and all these use cases. So augmented reality. And Tim Cook has said on multiple occasions, he's been quoted saying that he's really into augmented reality. He thinks it's going to be very useful.
Imagine that technology. Again, the killer app for me is if I have a pair of glasses or contacts or something like that, and it is detecting people's faces and it knows about people that I've tagged in photos, like you're saying, Michael. So I have tagged people in photos. If it makes a match, it can put that information like right up in front of me. Hey, that's so-and-so and that's so-and-so. I would love that feature.
That would be cool.
Yeah. So
I'm terrible with remembering people's names.
Yeah. Yeah, so am I. So it seems like there are kind of two different scenarios that are going to be playing out, that it's kind of coming together for the next generation iPhone. It looks like there are going to be three models, which is weird. And we had the same rumors happening last year too, where we thought there'd be three models, but it turns out that third mysterious model was just Apple kind of having a fallback procedure. But it seems like either Apple's going to have a 7S and a 7S Plus with the traditional aluminum frame, basically just upgraded internals as we have with the 7. And then they'll also introduce the iPhone 8, where it's going to be the all-glass stuff. It's going to have the 3D camera, edge-to-edge display. And the thing that is
OLED,
thank you. I think the most interesting part and the thing that really grabs me and makes me think this is going to happen is the idea that it's going to be in the 4.7-inch form factor, but it's going to have this, what is it, 5.8-inch display. So because it's going to be edge-to-edge, you can fit
it's
more...
It's not going to be 4.7 inches.
I believe that's what the rumors say.
The rumors...
way you can jam a 5.8-inch OLED display into the form factor of a 4.7-inch phone.
Correct. Is that, that's what I meant.
Right, yeah. So,
yeah, but there's no way you can fit that even with edge-to-edge glass.
Oh,
I don't think. Maybe I need to get a ruler out and measure my phone, but...
No, I'm pretty sure you're right, Adam. And it's... So right now we have this... These... I don't want to call them conflicting reports, but they're just different reports. And one of them is... Well, both are saying edge-to-edge screen. One is saying you're going to be able to have like a 5.1-inch display in the same size form factor as a 4.7-inch iPhone, and that's possible. And then there's another one that says we're going to have a 5.5-inch display, which would be a slightly bigger phone, but the bottom of the display there won't be a home button, and that will be what they're calling a function area. So it would be sort of like the touch bar on the MacBook Pro, where it's just reserved for virtual buttons and stuff.
Yeah, and by like the MacBook Pro, you mean like Android has had for years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess Android has technically had, they haven't actually been screen buttons, right? They've just kind of been illuminated regions.
Right, yeah. This would be part of the regular screen.
And it'd be a dynamically changing...
yes.
Portion too.
I mean, Michael is right. I mean, the KGI Research put out this graphic, right, that shows this 5.8-inch physical OLED
with 5.1 inch
with the 5.1-inch usable area and this function bar area, and they're claiming it'll jam into a 4.7-inch form factor.
That seems like
some funky math to me.
It's probably roughly the same package as the 4.7-inch phone.
If I could reach my ruler, I'd be doing some measurements right now.
What the heck is my ruler? Jeez. but this... So maybe it's not going to be identical to the 4.7-inch form factor, but to me...
Originally, I had heard it would be the 5.5-inch form factor, and I could buy that, like a 5.8-inch display fitting into the 5.5 form factor.
That part doesn't make any sense to me. I don't see... So if Apple is going to do this three-phone lineup where you've got the 7S Plus, and the 8 all at the same time, that 8 is going to be this magical, crazy device that just blows the other two away. You can get your upgraded traditional 7S phone if you want, but the 8 is going to be this magical one that doesn't sacrifice in terms of, you know, oh, this thing is enormous. It's going to be the size that you want in that 4.7-inch form factor, but you have a much bigger screen area. You've got all these extra features, yada, yada, yada. We've also heard that it's going to be priced at $1,000.
Like, they can take my money. They can charge me $1,500. I don't care. $2,000, sure. Give it to me.
That sounds like the 10th anniversary iPhone that we've been kind of anticipating, right? That sounds like the type
of
thing. I will
be so stoked because I was so fearful that this iPhone 8 was going to be about the size of the 5.5-inch phone, and I hate that size. I hate it.
Yeah, I think they want to make it more... Yeah. Interesting to a broader category of people, because with the, you know, it's going to be more expensive, obviously, but you don't want to put it further out of reach by making it enormous as well. And as we've seen in the past with, you know, when the Retina MacBook Pro came out, this is the same sort of idea. They introduced new MacBook Pros where it was upgraded internals, same form factor, but then you had this new thing where, you know, they're kind of pushing you in that direction, but they haven't gotten there yet because they can't bring the price down. It feels like that.
I can see Apple
get
doing
a ruler
that
on my phone right now.
Where the heck are the rulers?
I know. Mine's just out of reach.
Where's mine? Jeez. Oh, here's mine. I have a ruler. You guys.
So I have to ask, what kind of ruler are you using, Michael?
It's a metal front with cork on the back from Target.
Right, because you're into the engineer thing. No, mine is a type sizer.
A what's he what?
Type. You know, when you have letters on a page.
Oh, type sizer. Okay.
I can measure type with it.
Yeah, you can. So. You can totally. I mean, it's going to be literally edge to edge, 5.7. But you can.
So is the one corner to the one corner 5.8 inches?
It is. Yeah. 5.7, 5.8.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
all right.
Yeah, it's totally doable.
Well, then I sit corrected.
I'm glad I got that ruler. We brought that one to a close. We can move on now. Apple is allegedly testing 4K capable fifth generation Apple TV, codenamed J105, according to Bloomberg. It'll have better color, which, you know, that's totally.
So that means high dynamic range.
Yep. Totally in line with what Apple has been doing in the past with the 5K iMac. 4K or 5K? Am I insane?
5K iMac.
Okay, good. 5K iMac. And, you know, I believe the iPhone 7 also has that high dynamic range, right? That big color gamut.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, makes sense. Sounds like it's going to be just a traditional, you know, spec bump, as far as we can tell. And I think at this point in the game, you know, when the first fourth gen Apple TV came out, it would have been cool if they put out a 4K version, but it might have been too expensive, right? But I think at this point in the game, it makes sense for Apple to start putting out a 4K version.
Sure.
It's not going to have were you talking? What's the other standard that all the 4K, 5K TVs are moving to? Ultra high definition? UHD or something like that?
UHD.
Or is that the same thing?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like Apple's looking at, UHD.
Okay, that's the dynamic range stuff.
Yes. And
I thought originally when this story broke, it was just saying 4K.
They were saying 4K with enhanced color.
Okay.
Or more vivid colors. And then later on, that became... Well, more vivid colors, that actually means ultra high dynamic range.
Gotcha. Okay.
And
I don't really care.
It also means, hey,
4K
welcome
TV.
To 2015.
How many people here have a 4K TV?
I nope. Still have a 32-inch 720p Sharp Aquos that I bought in 2007.
And yeah. It's still rocking just fine for you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is why everybody likes to point to Apple and be like, they're so far behind. But like, even if they come out with a 4K Apple TV this year, I think they're in line with a big part of the television market. I don't even know, beyond the people who are really into TV stuff, you know, my friends that are like totally into this stuff. Most people that I know, their TV is, you know, 4 or 5 years old. It's just like people just don't buy TVs that frequently. 4K content is just now getting to the point where it kind of makes sense, in my opinion, to have a 4K TV because you can now actually get some things to go on 4K. So, you know, everybody liked to bag on Apple to say they should have had 4K out in, you know, a couple years ago. But I think they're sort of right in line with the consumer market in terms of 4K adoption.
I think you're right. And I think the problem with not adopting it before now is that it creates a perception that Apple is lagging behind the competition and right. That Apple TV is an inferior product.
So I just love all these people that probably had their like 4K Roku box and didn't even have a 4K TV.
Yeah.
But at least it supports 4K. So when I want to buy a 4K TV someday, I'll use it, except by the time they get to that someday, there'll be a new Roku box out and then they'll want that. But they'll buy the 8K Roku box for their 4K TV.
Yep. And I bet there's a lot of people that buy 4K Roku and 4K whatever and plug it into their 1080p television and think that they've got 4K. And so they tell themselves the image is better.
That's totally true. And they also stretch the image so they don't have bars.
Oh, gee, Jeff. Yeah, I hate when people do that.
I'm the guy who will, if I see that, if I go to your house, I'm going to change it. I'm that guy. I'm going to change your stuff because that's stupid.
You're my spirit animal, Michael.
Yeah. So, yeah, what else do we have here? Apple TV, FCC chairman. He was speaking. Where was he speaking? He was speaking at the Future of Radio and Audio Symposium in Washington, D.C. And he's advocating that phone makers should be enabling the FM receivers that are built into almost all modern phones that I did not realize was there. I think we talked about it some point, but I forgot.
It's just rolled into the chip.
It's been there forever.
Chip. Yeah.
Yeah. It's always disabled.
Yeah.
I think since it's probably been there since the very first iPhone. Remember they had it?
I think we did.
Wasn't there a version of the iPod where it was enabled?
Like it was the iPod
Shuffle or something?
iPod Nano.
It's the Nano. But you have to have wire. Yeah, you have to have your headphones plugged in.
Well, yeah, because that worked as the antenna.
Right. But,
yeah, I mean, the chips have been around that long. I mean, and that's why they were able to put that feature on, was it's like the audio processing chip that was in there, whatever chip was in there, already had the capabilities for it. It was just, it's software disabled.
It makes a lot of sense.
Or firmware disabled, probably more likely. But
it makes sense that it's in there and disabled. I mean, a lot of these off-the-shelf chips, and we're talking, I believe, about the cellular modems.
Right.
You know, if you, basically you need to have an antenna for this thing to work, right? And so I don't believe that you could, that Apple could issue an update tomorrow and enable FM capability on the
especially
iPhone.
Especially since there's no headphone jack now.
Well, I mean, you would get it through your other headphones, but I like your
Lightning headphones.
Use the wireless connection between your AirPods and your iPhone as a virtual antenna.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Can you do that?
Of course. Of course you
sure.
Can.
In magic land.
If you can think it, you can do it.
If you can think it, you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't even know if it would work with like the Lightning. I don't even know if the pins are there to do it with the Lightning headphones. Well,
I think the issue is there needs to be some antenna capability, right? So either it needs to be built into the chassis of the phone, as the other receivers have antennas, or
right.
You need to have it through your AirPods or what
Who cares?
Have you.
It's a stupid idea anyway.
I don't think it's that stupid. I would like doing that from time to time. They're definitely situations.
When's the last time you listened to FM radio?
FM, probably not very often.
When's the last time?
Last time?
I have not listened to FM radio since I discovered podcasts.
Yeah, I don't listen to FM radio.
Which is 2004.
I will occasionally turn on NPR in my car.
Years. That's AM, right?
No, there's an FM NPR station in Denver and Boulder. And so I'll turn that on for news every now and then. Like if I'm stuck in traffic.
And I'm guessing this is why he wants it activated, actually, is probably as an emergency thing.
That was brought up, yes.
That seems...
So if we have an apocalypse and the internet goes down and the government needs to get information to people, having an FM radio would be useful.
I agree. It would be useful. That would be
now,
good.
Now, isn't FM slowly being phased out? I mean, I don't know if that's really happening, but I've heard
in
Europe...
favor of what?
FM radio is being phased out in favor of other radio streaming technologies and satellite radio is a big thing. And so I don't know, but it just, the only real useful reason I can see for doing this would be as an emergency broadcast system. So right. If there's some sort of disaster and cellular service is lost, which means we lose wireless internet service as well, then you could still get information out over FM bands. But
right.
But now, yeah, you assume that every smartphone has an extra antenna that can be plugged in all the time to make that work. So it doesn't seem that practical.
Yeah. Anything where the government's going to come in and like mandate or require anything like this. I know this is just encouraging activation, but you know, if their plan is still ultimately
encouraging is the first step.
Yeah, exactly. If this is the first step towards legislation to try and force manufacturers to enable it, I'm not for that.
Really. He specifically addressed that. He said he's not into having an official recommendation from the FCC, let alone any legislation.
Right.
Well, then that just kills this as a tool for emergency broadcast system.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah.
Let's see. So this is pretty interesting.
It's going to lead right into this next one. I mean, because that feature, it might be nice if there was a way for it to be an optional, like, hey, I can flip this switch and the phone will enable it for me in an emergency situation. I don't know if that would ever be possible.
Yeah, I suppose
it's probably disabled in the firmware.
It probably wouldn't be that big of a deal to add another trace to your Lightning headphones, right?
Anyway,
and flip a switch.
Leading into the next story, though, because it's kind of about the same thing.
Did you actually read the show notes, Adam?
In certain ways,
you read the show notes. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wait, we have show notes?
I know. so Nebraska. I believe they're one of eight states that are considering legislation that would force companies to make it easier to repair stuff. So they call it the right to repair law. And the idea, the way they would implement this is they would require companies like Apple and, you know, Google, Samsung, et cetera, to provide diagnostic and service manuals in addition to repair parts, official OEM repair parts, so that we could do that ourselves. So Nebraska is
To end users and third-party repair centers.
Yes, and Nebraska is the first state that is actually going to be putting it to a vote, I believe. No, to debate. They're actually bringing it up. There's additional legislation, additional bills, I should say, introduced in Illinois, Tennessee, Michigan, Minnesota, New York, Kansas, Massachusetts. I like it.
I bet you the iFixit people love this idea.
Oh, I'm sure.
Of course, iFixit. Companies like that would love it, and it would be great for them. Just generally speaking, though, I'm not on board with this.
The issue. So I like the idea.
Me neither.
Diagnostic manuals and repair parts, that's fine, but
no, it really isn't. But
I think it's fine, but if it goes beyond that and tries to mandate, if it affects the way in which Apple puts things together or designs products, then it's an issue.
Well, ultimately, it would be an issue because once you get to the point where companies like Apple and Google and Samsung, whoever, are being forced to provide OEM parts and manuals to whoever wants them, you're going to get class action lawsuits where people are claiming that Apple is intentionally designing their devices so that even though we can buy parts, we can't fix them. And then eventually this leads to legislation that that dictates that phones must be designed and other products must be designed in such a way that end users can repair them.
Right. Can't glue in batteries anymore. You have to have connectors for RAM chips and other things. It's a slippery slope that it leads down. Because you start to have to define what is repairable or what is right to repair. So you start off and saying, well, first you've got to give us parts and you've got to let us be able to open it up. And, you know, those pentalobe screws, nope, you can't have those.
that whole system that Apple plugs your phone into to calibrate the screen when they have to replace it. Nope, can't do that anymore.
Right.
Or they have to make the system available to anyone that wants to use it.
Yeah. Well, for what it's worth, to get a new screen on your iPhone 7 out of warranty, it's $130 and mm-hmm. you get a legit iPhone screen. You get it calibrated. It's done professionally and correctly. You're basically saving like $30 if you go to some random shop that'll do it for you. And you may save a little bit more money if you do it yourself. But in the end, you're kind of getting a bad deal unless you go to Apple and have them do it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think part of this too, though, is in a lot of ways frustration, especially with people who have older devices and really don't want to be upgrading and don't want to be buying new, because at a certain point, right, Apple does not service these things and doesn't carry even parts for them. And at that point, you're sort of sunk, right? Because even if you can get the parts, you may or may not have a repair manual or a guide or even know how to fix it.
Well, that's what iFixit is for.
Right. Right, but they have to reverse engineer the whole thing. So
yeah, just like with old cars.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, now in cars, the time scale is much longer than it is with an iPhone. But still, you get to a point with cars where there are not parts, and then you have to reverse engineer them, manufacture them yourself.
Right.
Find some company that's really into vintage parts, and you pay premiums for them, and it just happens faster with electronic devices than it does with, say, a car.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you want to move on to iDevice picks then?
Sure.
Yep.
All right. What's yours, Jeff?
I have two, and I need to pick them based on what Adam's pick is, because I don't want to pick yours if we have the same thing.
All right, go, Adam.
So, Adam, you go first.
I'm going to go first.
Unless you're not ready.
Just go.
Well, I'm totally ready. Like, I'm just curious to see if you were going to pick what I picked.
All right.
Which is a game, and you may be picking it because you may know because I've picked this a couple of other places, but I'm totally stoked about it because I've been waiting forever.
All right.
And it is a little game called Hidden Folks.
And this is why I had a second pick ready to go.
Yeah. This game is amazing. I've been waiting for it to come out for about, I think, a year or so. It is a little hidden picture style game. Very much in the vein of Where's Waldo?
Cool.
Hand-drawn, hand-illustrated, very detailed little drawings that are animated in very clever ways. You're given sort of a list of people or objects you're trying to find in the scene, and you have to swipe and scroll around. For each level, there's kind of like a little intro level that teaches you little mechanics of the world. So things like, hey, you can tap on a tree or a leaf to kind of move it aside and there might be something there, or you might have to open up a door or pull aside some curtains. Or so it's not just, you know, like look around the picture and find this stuff. Sometimes the animations and the interactions that are going on the screen play into your ability to actually find the thing that you're looking for. And some of the things are really easy and some are hard, and some actually rely on, again, what's built into the animation. And I don't want to give much more away than that, but it's like $3.99, super fun.
I love the sound effects.
Yeah, the sound effects are all done by one guy with just his mouth. He just like made all the sounds with his mouth. And it's something like 95 or 96 different sounds. That are throughout the thing. And
the art is wonderful.
Yeah, I've just been enjoying it so much. You can play a little and just kind of put it away, you know, so it's a good casual game.
And yeah, I like that at the bottom of the screen, you get this row that shows what the things are that you're looking for. When you tap on them, you get a little clue about where or how to try and find that thing.
Yeah. And it's not too obvious. And you will need the clues. So use the clues. It's not cheating in this game. It's not like, because some of the things you will probably never find if you don't get the hint.
Right. And yeah. And then you don't have to find everything. There's more to find on each level than you actually need to move forward to the next one. So, you know, so that's cool because there are things that will be less difficult to find. So people that get frustrated easier, they still have incentive to move forward. But if you're really persistent, you want to find all this other stuff. Okay, you can just keep hunting.
That's me. I won't leave a level until I've located every object. The drawings are massive, and they get bigger and more complex and more detailed sort of as you move along. And it is available for iPhone, iPad, Mac, PC, Apple TV. We even play it on our Apple TV, which is a whole nother level of just like insanity. Like playing this from across the room. But it's pretty cool the way they've done it, because you can double tap on the Apple remote and it will go in one zoom level, and you double tap again and it'll go in another zoom level. So you can kind of zoom in and out so you can get a little more detail, or you can zoom way out and kind of get a bigger picture, figure out the area you need to move into, and then zoom in to try and actually find something. So they've just done a really good job with the whole thing. And like I said, it's, I think, $4, $3.99. So it's a great price. No in-app purchase. Just download and enjoy.
Nice.
So Hidden Folks or Hidden Folk?
Hidden Folks. So, Jeff, what's your backup pick?
My backup pick is the OtterBox Statement Series case for the iPhone. And the reason that's my pick is because this last week I finally broke the screen on an iPhone for the first time. And I was due, you know, I've had iPhone since the first model came out. So in that respect, I wasn't too upset. But what really chaffed me was that my iPhone was in Apple's leather case, and my iPhone fell maybe 12 inches. And it hit the bottom edge and just cracked the crap out of that, because Apple's case doesn't protect that part of your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I had to go into the Apple store, and I was without my phone for several hours, which is stunningly stressful. And when I got my phone back before I left the store, I tried a bunch of cases on my iPhone and ended up buying this. It adds a little bit of bulk, but it's like really durable, and it protects your phone all the way around. And it even has a leather piece on it, so you know, so it doesn't look just like a crappy plastic case.
Nice.
Yeah, it makes it look like an iPhone 1.
Yeah, actually it does.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, actually. It's retro.
Mm-hmm.
You get the two-tone effect. I guess if you have a silver iPhone, I guess if you have a different color, it'll be different. But with a silver iPhone, it looks just like a Series 1.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about that, but I have the space gray iPhone, so of course I didn't think about that. But you're right; it makes it look a lot like the original iPhone. But you can still get at the buttons, and you just have to push a little harder, and you can get at the mute switch easily, and it's you can get to the lightning port no problem. So anyhow. I left the store with this on my phone, and they're $39.95. Come in like four or five different colors. I went with blue. And as much as I love Apple's leather case, it will never go back on my phone.
Oh,
I love my Apple leather case. I'll never use anything different.
I love it, but I don't want to put another screen on my phone. I ended up with the new phone out of it because something went wrong and the screen calibrator bricked my phone. Wow. So they're like, sorry about that. Here's a new phone.
So the screen calibrator broke the graphics guy's phone. How about that?
Jeff, did you have AppleCare Plus? Or no? Did you have to pay out of warranty?
I had to pay out of warranty, and it's because I didn't realize I hadn't put AppleCare on this phone. This is the first time I did the swap out thing with AT&T. Right. And in the process of doing all that, I didn't realize until I broke my screen that I hadn't bought AppleCare for this phone.
Yeah. I may be in the same boat at this point.
Yeah, I don't have that.
I honestly don't remember.
But, you know, still paying $130 for what in the end ended up being a new phone. I would have been fine if it had been my old phone with a new screen. Right. But I knew everything was handled right and that I had parts that weren't going to make my phone stop working. And I knew exactly what to expect. So $130 and my problem was fixed. Another $40 and I have a good case on my phone.
Cool. All right. So it was the statement series case.
Statement series.
Cool. All right. So my pick this week it's super free. And awesome. It's my new favorite show on Beats One, Selection Radio. Have you guys checked out Selection Radio? Have you heard it?
Nope.
I have, but I've just caught little bits of it while I'm doing other things.
Well, you know, the great thing about Beats One is you can just go in there and listen to all the previous shows.
So I know. I need to go do that now that I know you love this.
They're coming up on episode 300 of the show. So Selection is, they're also a label. And so they kind of specialize in, they like to say, you know, timeless music. I would describe it as a lot of like down-tempo, jazz, R&B, that kind of stuff. It's awesome for like ambiance and, you know, doing homework, doing work in general, sitting at your desk. It puts you in that good mood, and it's a pleasure to listen to. It's great. It's one of my favorites on Beats One. So it's a Selection Radio, and, I don't know when it comes on. I think it's Saturdays, maybe 7 p.m. You can always look it up. But if you have Beats One or an Apple Music subscription, I should say, then you can pull up those shows whenever you want to. So check it out, Selection Radio. And with that, you can find all the picks and show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes. Tell a friend. Send your questions, comments, and feedback to feedback@theiosshow.com. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the MacCast at MacCast.com, at MacCast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Thanks for having me, as always.
And Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, TMO Daily Observations Podcast every weekday, and at Jay Gamet on Twitter. And I'm getting you out on time. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Thanks for being stunningly awesome with the time. Yeah. And every week is just a blast.
Yeah. And I am at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show. Ba-doop boop.
Ba-doom boop.
An iPod. An iPod. Internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.